You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi everybody, producer Al here. It's time for another TSFP Presents re-release here on the Monday podcast feed, and it's another episode of TSFP Presents A History of Transfers. This series was first released for patrons back in 2019, and this episode discusses the most influential transfers in La Liga history. For more of this kind of thing, you can join us over at patreon.com/TSFP. If you're looking for a last-minute Christmas present for the Spanish football fan in your life, you can sign them up to an annual membership, and you get 10% off as well. This will be the last episode up on the Monday feed for 2023 as La Liga takes a break over Christmas. Thank you as always for listening, and thanks for your support over the last year, and Merry Christmas to those of you who celebrate. We'll be back in the new year.
Hello patrons, and welcome to another edition of TSFP Presents A History of Transfers. Today we're talking about the transfers that have had the biggest impact on La Liga. We've got some very interesting transfers and stories to go through. There are a few notable absentees from today's podcast because we're going to dedicate a specific podcast to some of the biggest names.
Such is their influence that they deserve a pod of their own.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Di Stefano, Johan Cruyff, Messi and Ronaldo on a separate pod, because just basically they do deserve a full podcast of their own. But there are...
Is that the one after the podcast we dedicate purely to Diego Cervero? Or
Diego Cervero.
Has a podcast of his own, doesn't he?
He hasn't even ever played in La Liga, Sid. He's never played in La Liga. He's not getting a podcast. I'm sorry. I'm beating.
We're not doing Segunda B's greatest ever buys.
If and when we do that,
TSFP presents.
Yes. If and when we do the greatest ever Segunda B goal machines, he will be right there at the top of the list. But this is about real legends and players who have had a huge impact in La Liga. We're going to kick off, and it's a little bit sort of chronological, I think, how we've done this.
A little bit chronological.
Yes.
That means it's basically chronological, but if it's not exactly, don't have a go at us. That's
more or
what
less,
that means.
More or less. Yeah. It's a little bit chronological. Also, we are recording al fresco, so apologies if there is a little bit of background noise.
I didn't realise his surname was Fresco.
Oh, God. Sydney, really?
That's my Italian cousin.
Yes. So we're going to kick off by talking about Laszlo Kubala, or Ladislao Kubala, yeah, as he's known in Spain.
Well, he nationalised as a Spaniard.
I've got... I had a colleague who was called Ladislao. Mm. Spanish.
What do you call him, Lasley?
Ladis.
Ladis.
Yes. It's not a very common name.
It's not a very common name, no.
But Laszlo Kubala is a name that is very much known to Barcelona fans. If you're not a Barcelona fan, you might ring a bell, you might have heard of him. You might not be aware of the impact he had on Football Club Barcelona.
I mean, as a rule of thumb, if you've got a statue outside Camp Nou...
Yes.
You've done all right.
You've done well.
Well, he's the only one who has.
Indeed. There you go. And for a club like Barcelona, that sort of says it all, really.
And yeah, the fact that it's Camp Nou is significant as well, because while it's partly been mythologised, he's always seen as the guy that built the Camp Nou. Now, obviously, he didn't physically, literally build it, although if you see footage of him, he certainly could have done, because he was a big, strong man. He could have hod-carried for you quite easily. But he's always seen as the guy who built the Camp Nou, because he changed everything at Barcelona. That he was the one who made them the best team in the world, which they were, until the signing of Di Stefano.
Not the best team in Europe.
Well, they were the best team in the world before the signing of Di Stefano, right. So that's what changes it. They were, you know, they, in a way, Barcelona were victims of timing. Had the European Cup begun 6-7 years earlier, or maybe even 6-7 years later, this whole thing might feel very, very different. And he was the one that, through the at least this is the way the story runs, that through the impact of what he did, through the revolutionising of football, through changing the way the game was played, through making it exciting, created an environment in which the old stadium was too small and they needed this new stadium. Now, it's not entirely true. They'd already bought the plot of land before he'd even arrived, but that's certainly kind of the justification for it.
So he signs for Barcelona in 1951, and the actual transfer is an interesting one. And his backstory is also pretty fascinating.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. And he plays his first game in 51, but he's officially signed the year before. Mm. But he's on an amateur contract for that first year, basically because let's not cut a very long story short. But let's try and praise it a little bit. Obviously, Kubala is Hungarian. He escapes after the 48 rising, I believe it is. He decides he wants to leave. He actually crosses into US-controlled Austria,
yes,
on the back of a Russian truck.
He's a refugee.
Pretending to be a Russian soldier through the middle of the night, crosses the Alps. From Austria, he goes to Italy. In Italy, he has the opportunity to play for Torino, which he turns down. And actually, the game that he would have played, the game that they'd offered him to play in, was the one that they were on their way to when they had the plane crash, the Superga plane crash, which, of course, killed the entire Torino team. He was told that because he was denounced by the Hungarian Football Association, he was effectively banned from playing football. So what happens is he plays for a team called Pro Patria in Italy, and then forms a team called Hungria with Fernando Dalcek, who is his brother-in-law, a load of other Hungarian refugees, and they create this team because they're officially not allowed to play football. That team tours Spain, and in Spain in 1950, of course, he gets seen by Espanyol, Real Madrid and Barcelona. And this is, before Di Stefano, the original Barcelona-Real Madrid tug of war.
Because Real Madrid were very interested in signing him.
Real Madrid believe that they have a chance of getting him. They've offered him a contract. He is inclined to take it, but also knows he has a discussion with Barcelona pending. Barcelona get this Hungarian swimmer, whose name I'm going to look up for you because I did have it written down, Zolimi, who basically decide, they say, right, stick to him, don't let him get out of sight, make friends with him, and just kind of, nudge him our way. And sticking to him and making friends with him essentially involves drinking an enormous amount of alcohol. And in the end, Barcelona, when they have a discussion with Kubala about the contract, Kubala pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket and says, I want a contract like this. And what he shows them, or at least this is the version of the story that's been accepted over the years, what he shows them is a copy of the offer that Real Madrid have given him. Mm-hmm. And in the end, Barcelona take it. Now, one of the reasons why Real Madrid were furious about this was because Real Madrid had been told by the Spanish Football Federation to back off. Mm-hmm. Not to try and sign him because of the problems it would cause them with FIFA, because he's officially at this point ineligible for playing. He can't play football. He's not allowed to. He's a pirate footballer, which is a phrase that we'll come back to. Can't play official games. So he plays for Barcelona in some friendlies. There's a lovely line where Pepe Simitier, who is the sporting director at Barcelona, in some of the friendlies, and obviously this tells you that these are different times. He says, "Now remember, you go on the pitch. Your name is Oligadio, and you're mute." So much so that people at Barcelona called him Oligadio for years.
Wow.
Oliged.
That's true.
He was very, very, very expensive, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
They had to pay him 1,200 pesetas a month, plus an extra 3,800 pesetas in what was known as living expenses. And, at that time, that is an enormous amount of money.
Okay.
Those expenses are quite high.
That's on him. That's not on the fee, obviously.
Yes.
There's no fee, at least.
Worth it, though.
Absolutely worth it. This is a guy genuinely, and you talk to his teammates as I've done, obviously, because writing the book a few years ago, and they really do talk about him as a player that was just on a totally different level. I mean, Josep Seguer died not long ago. I spoke to him about it. He said, look, he used to carry us. He used to win games on his own, and he was this enormous, powerful, muscular man, but very, very elegant with it, very dainty on the ball. You watch footage of him and there's all these kind of drag backs and flicks and stuff, and all right, it looks like old football, but it still looks like he's different. And there's a sense that he kind of revolutionized the game. And you talk to his teammates and they say that he changed the game. Things like curling the ball over a wall, at a time when no one was doing it, he was doing it. He did things that they genuinely hadn't seen before, and they won 4 league titles with him. They won 5 cups with him. This is the league in 52, 53, 59 and 60. The cups in 51, 52, 53, 57 and 55. Mm. They won the Fairs Cup, which at a time when there wasn't yet an official European competition, kind of makes them the best team in Europe. I mean, it's a little bit not quite right because it's kind of a city team, but you know, Barcelona.
So what do you mean there wasn't a European competition?
The Fairs Cup is what would eventually segue into the UEFA Cup.
Right, but there was still the
European Cup hadn't started yet. This means so they win the Fairs Cup before that, and then they win it then as it starts to overlap with the European Cup. So the two that they actually win are as it overlaps with the European Cup. So in 55, here's a funny one for you. In 55-58,
yes,
it was a 3-year kind of bizarre competition. And in 58-60, and they also won what was known as the Copa Latina, which is essentially, I think I'm right in saying, France, Italy and Spain. So, you know, a chunk of Europe. And they were the best team around. And he was, you know, the heart of that team. He's also the reason why the whole Di Stefano thing happened. Because he got tuberculosis. He lost 7 kilos. He had a medical report that said, quite brilliantly, no apto para el deporte, you know, not apt for playing football, can't play football anymore. And that is the moment at which Barcelona start looking for a replacement for him, because they're worried about him. They start looking for a replacement, and of course, the person they find is Alfredo Di Stefano.
To be continued.
To be continued, yes. We will save that story.
Obviously, what happened
podcast.
Was he overcame tuberculosis and carried on playing anyway.
Yes, and Di Stefano joined Real Madrid. But
and Di Stefano and him were really, really good mates. And Di Stefano always said, you know, he was a special player.
They worked together at Espanyol.
Yeah, they were together
managers,
at Espanyol.
Yeah.
No, they played together at Espanyol.
Oh, they played together.
They both coming to the end of their career.
Right.
And Di Stefano had an awful lot of time for him, so he could kick the ball like a cannonball.
Yes, right. Well, another man who could kick a ball like a cannonball is Luis Aragonés. Let's talk about him and his move to Atletico Madrid. Obviously, he is a legendary figure in Spanish football.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of people listening to the podcast will know him as the manager of the Spain national team. Obviously, led them to their triumph in Euro 2008. A manager of clubs as well, not least Atletico Madrid. But as a player, he had a huge impact on Atletico. He made his La Liga debut for
Real Oviedo.
Yes. Played his first ever game in La Liga. So there you go. We've managed to get Real Oviedo into the podcast, and that's it. Then he moved to Real Betis, where he was for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then he joined Atletico Madrid and went on to achieve so much.
Yeah, and become arguably the most influential figure in the history of Atleti.
And should, I say should, yeah, okay, I'm going to stick with should have scored the most important goal in Atletico Madrid's entire history.
Yes, in the
1974 European Cup final.
There we go. 74-75, isn't it? No,
73-74. And he scores a goal in extra time, a free kick, and he was an expert free kicks that gives him the lead. I think it's the 111th minute when he scores. And then, you know, with a couple of minutes to go, a guy called Schwarzenbeck scores for Bayern Munich this ludicrously long-range shot, which, frankly, the goalkeeper, Pepe Reina's dad, makes I believe it was Pepe Reina's dad. Anyway, it was Miguel Reina, wasn't it, in that final? Anyway, I've got slight doubt creeping into my mind now, but I think it was him. Makes a bit of a mess of, and it finishes 1-1, and then Bayern Munich win the replay.
4-0.
Bayern Munich renounce the opportunity to play in the Intercontinental Cup, and so Atletico Madrid go and win the Intercontinental Cup. So they're the only team, as far as I know, who have won the Intercontinental Cup without winning the European Cup.
He's also the top goal scorer in the history of Atletico Madrid. Antoine Griezmann's closing in. He's about sort of 40 or 50 goals behind him.
And when you think about all the great strikers they've had, I mean, that is serious.
Yeah, exactly. You know, 360 games he played for Atletico Madrid. Just and not really a goal scorer as such, in that he was kind of an all-round, creative, attacking midfielder, a man of incredible talent, actually. And as well as a little touch of attitude. But that touch of attitude, I think, really comes across when he becomes a manager rather than the player. And as we're talking about influential signings, you know, as we'll do, I'm sure, when we talk about Cruyff, you know, his influence goes well beyond the fact that he's a player. He becomes a manager immediately after stopping being a player, immediately wins the cup. He wins, I think, as a player, three leagues and two cups. As a manager, he then goes and immediately wins the cup. This is a guy whose impact on Atletico Madrid is huge, who was manager of Atletico Madrid four different times.
That's remarkable.
Across
and
30
spanning,
years.
Exactly, spanning a huge period.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite extraordinary. I think we saw this when he died, didn't we? The response from Atletico Madrid when he died, I think, told you how important he
was. They still sing his name. Yes. I mean, his name still gets sung at most games. Obviously, it's a slightly sort of facile thing to say, but he is Atletico Madrid. I mean, he symbolises a lot of what Atletico Madrid fans identify with.
Absolutely. And as I say, you know, he becomes manager immediately after he stops playing. He wins the Intercontinental Cup. And he symbolises that. Born in Hortaleza, which is northeast of Madrid, which is not necessarily Atletico country.
No.
But very, very associated with being Madrileño, with being with that great word castizo, which is really difficult to translate, kind of real, authentic, the tradition of Madrid, if you like, the kind of the heartbeat of Madrid as a city. And you're right, in that sense, he's the embodiment of what Atletico would like to think they are. And also, even stylistically, because he was, despite what happened in the Spanish national team, a coach who was largely wedded to the idea of counter-attacking football until, of course, he took over the Spain team, saw what he had and said, OK. So that's the other thing, of course, his influence with the Spanish national team is gigantic too.
I mean, as we will see with quite a lot of these signings, it is perhaps interesting to see or just imagine, hypothetically,
what happens if they're not there.
I mean, you know, if Luis Aragonés doesn't join Atletico Madrid and he stays with Betis or he goes back to Oviedo,
We could have been the biggest team in Spain.
Who knows what would have happened?
I mean, he was manager of Real Oviedo when we were relegated.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, in 2001, and said to Esteban a really nice line. I mean, obviously, I don't suppose it was a huge amount of consolation at that point. But Oviedo go down, and it's very famous that he said to Esteban, "Every time it rains, it clears up again." But, you know, this might seem like a tragic storm now, but things will come good.
All right, people in Oviedo know that. It rains all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, it clears up again, and then it rains again.
And actually it didn't clear up for God knows how many years. It still hasn't cleared up.
All right, so that's Luis Aragonés. Let's move on and talk about another player and another team and go into the 80s now. That was in 1964 when we talk about Luis Aragonés.
When he started, absolutely.
But into the 80s, and let's talk about Mario Kempes joining Valencia from Rosario Central in 1976. But he would then
stay till 81.
Stay till 81.
Went and then to River 81, 82, and then went back to Valencia from 82 for two more years.
I mean, you could possibly, and there have been a lot of very good players who have played for Valencia. He is right up there with one of the best ever players to have ever played.
I think he is the best.
Their biggest legend, without
question. I think if you ask most Valencia fans, they would say he's the best player of all time. I was actually looking
maybe
at
David Villa.
Well, I looked at an online poll earlier on today, and obviously conditioned by immediacy and the closeness, but Villa was the only person who outpolled him. So Villa was top, and Kempes was second. If you go back to more kind of like historically minded polls, he's almost always at the top. El Matador.
El Matador.
And yet didn't actually want to play at number nine. And one of the reasons why he fell out, or not fell out, but was unhappy with Alfredo Di Stefano, was Alfredo Di Stefano in the Cup Winners' Cup final that they won against Arsenal. Arsenal's player's number nine. He told Alfredo Di Stefano, "You're killing me with this." You can imagine that as well, can't you, in Argentinian?
Me estás matando,
boludo. Anyway, but they won. And I believe they beat Arsenal on penalties. I think he missed his penalty, but he was the player. 173 goals for Valencia. His signing is quite an interesting one as well, because the sporting director at Valencia had never actually seen him play. And there's another lovely line in this in a recent interview. Obviously, you can tell that it's recent because of what he says, in which Kempes says, "Well, it was like buying something off the internet." Obviously, back then there was no internet. The sporting director at Valencia had read loads of copies of Gráfico, the legendary Argentinian football magazine,
right?
And all these reports about how good Kempes was, and so he said, "Right, I want to try and sign this guy." So what he did was invite him for a trial. There was, and I didn't know this until I started looking up on this. I didn't know this part of the story. Rosario Central had the offer. They knew the size of the offer. They knew it would be huge, but they put it to a vote: should we let him go or not? And in the end, they got a yes, because, you know, the sense that you can't deny this guy an opportunity because they have a huge amount of money that was going to bring in. I'll tell you the figure in a minute. And he went to Valencia and was absolutely brilliant.
He also obviously won the World Cup in 1978 with Argentina.
Yes.
On home
top scorer. Top scorer.
Yeah. And the interesting fact that I saw today was the only foreign-based player in that Argentina squad.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think the fact that he was a World Cup winner and sort of quite sort of, I don't know, for want of a word, glamorous, sort of adds to his legend?
Absolutely. And also the way he looked.
Definitely, yeah. I was going to say, talk about glamorous. Yes. He did have that look and the hair and everything else.
The melena, that lovely word. What would you call that in English? Flowing locks.
Yes.
40 million pesetas, the equivalent of about $600,000 at the time, which was a huge fee. He tells a story about how he played his first game in the Trofeo Naranja, Valencia's traditional pre-season tournament, and they drew 2-2 with CSKA Moscow. He misses his penalty in the shootout, and everyone says, this guy is rubbish. There's actually a little bit of newspaper clippings talking about how the fans have it out with him. They don't think he's very good. They've been defraudado, you know, let down yet again. and it all goes good.
It's not like fans to be reactionary, is it?
Yeah, especially not especially not Valencia.
Yes, yeah. Well,
and he then plays his first league game against Celta. I think scores twice, and the rest is history on TSFP Presents.
Yes, I mean, as you said, he'd scored loads of goals for Valencia and led them to the Cup Winners' Cup, as we said, which was their first major piece of European silverware. They also won the UEFA Super Cup and obviously the Copa del Rey to get into the Cup Winners' Cup as
well.
A really successful period, scoring a lot of goals and remains a legend. He's on ESPN now, I think.
Yes, he is. He's a very good pundit because he's incredibly honest, quite direct. He's brave in what he says, because I mean, as a Valencia ambassador,
I was going to say that's the thing. They still looked to him quite a lot for comment on the state of the club, and he
criticises elements of Valencia despite the fact he's a club employed ambassador, which is very, very unusual. But he has a status, I think, and an attitude as well, which means he's prepared to do so.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Let's move on and talk about another player who had a big impact, maybe even more so off the pitch than on the pitch in La Liga. John Aldridge and his move to Real Sociedad. This was a transfer that Sydney insisted we stuck into this podcast for one major reason. And what was that, Sydney?
Well, the major reason is that we're talking about the influence and the impact that signings have. And I think the impact of Aldridge, when we're talking about the first non-Basque player that Real Sociedad has signed in 30 years, the breaking of a policy, I think that has an influence way beyond just Real Sociedad. I think Aldridge was one that, because of how well he played, he wasn't the only one, because others obviously arrived. Kevin Richardson arrived and Dalian Atkinson arrived as well. But he's the one that starts all of this. And what he did was justify that it was worth breaking this policy. And it's a policy that's a curious one, because of course he turns up in September 89, and they then buy him, they buy other foreigners. They don't buy a non-Basque Spaniard until 2001, when they buy Boris from Real Oviedo.
Of course.
Right, so this tells you that there was still that slight sense of, should we really have broken this? And we don't want to break it entirely, but Aldridge became absolutely adored by Real Sociedad fans. And this is a guy who turns up at the training ground and sees graffiti on the wall of the training ground saying, "No outsiders welcome here." The first thing he sees, pretty much.
Was it in English?
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
He might have had no idea what it
said.
Told him it said, "Welcome, John."
Funny enough, now that you say that, that brings to mind the story. And I think he tells the story of asking what it says and someone telling him. And you're right, they could have said, "It says, John, you're lovely. Yes. We
love
you
your moustache. Well. Yeah. Have a great time."
And obviously the context of this is that, and the reason they changed the policy is that they're starting to get picked off. So López Ricarte, Baquero, Beguiri Stein, they've all gone. These are their big, big players. You know, they go to Barcelona. And funny enough, all three of those players publicly complained when they signed Aldridge. But it's partly happening because you're going.
Pissed off. Yeah.
The other great thing about John Aldridge, of course, you've got San Sebastian, one of the greatest cities in the world. You couldn't ask to live in a nicer place. Couldn't settle.
didn't like it, went home to Tranmere.
He loved it. This is the weird thing. He loved it. His phrase was, food, drink and football, what more can you want? That's what I had and that's what my life is. Problem was his daughters didn't settle very well. Mm-hmm. And so when he left in 91...
Because he was only there for 2 years.
He was only there for 2 years, scored a lot of goals. He was he left in 91 and I remember him saying, and there's some lovely footage of this, him saying basically, I'm very sad to go, I don't want to go, but I've got to go.
Mm.
It then took him a very long time to go back. He was back for a documentary about 2-3 years ago, and the reception was extraordinary.
Did he pick up any Spanish? No.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit,
not a huge amount, but a little bit.
It was only a couple of
so
years.
So when he came back, and this reception thing that he came to in a couple of years ago, he came back and he spoke to the media in broken Spanish then. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. 1.5 million euros.
Yeah, it was in 1989, not 1981. So yeah, he was there for a couple of years. And then, as Al says, he went back to Tranmere Rovers, which is quite an interesting
place. When he went to Real Sociedad, he didn't want to go.
Hmm.
He was very, very bitter at the way that Liverpool had tried to push him out.
Well, and understandably as well, because he was brilliant at Liverpool. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. So there we go. An impact as much off the pitch as on the pitch, John Aldridge.
40 goals, man.
In 75 appearances, which is a pretty good
six
going.
Of them at the Camp Nou.
which
helps.
Another player that you insisted we stick in here is Donato and his move from Atletico Madrid to Deportivo La Coruña in 1993.
There was a deal done
for
him to go to Real Madrid.
Okay.
But he did not find this out until much, much later. And that deal was never accepted because, of course, Jesus Hill was like, there's no way I'm selling this guy to Real Madrid. But he didn't actually want him at Atletico anymore. Donato was already getting on a bit. He was 31 when he arrived at Depor. Now, that's not to say, but OK, this is the end of it. But he was 31 when he arrived. He signed a 4-year deal. He then, from that moment onwards, signed 1-year deals every year for 7 years.
Yes.
He was playing till he was 41.
A decade. It's incredible.
That is quite an impact.
Yes. And obviously, you know, in terms of an impact and a moment, and you know, you can actually argue that in that team, Mauro Silva was as important as him, but this is the guy that becomes the oldest ever outfield player to score, well, oldest ever outfield player in La Liga history, the oldest outfield player to score in La Liga history at 41. And, of course, I suppose, in terms of an impact, an emotional impact, he is on the pitch when Depor blow the league title.
Mm.
He's a regular penalty taker, but he's not on the pitch. He's on the bench. That's the point. He's been taken off 10 minutes before. The penalty gets missed by Djukic and Depor don't win the league. Do finally win the league in 99-2000. He's the guy that scores the header that wins the league for them. And if only for that, Donato, this man with a big fat belly, who I went to interview, I didn't realise this until I started looking this up. I went to interview 18.
Man with a big fat belly.
He was roly poly.
Yes.
I interviewed him 18 years ago, and there's a line in the interview where he says, "We have a real problem with the press here. All they want to talk about is Madrid and Barcelona." But wow, some things have never changed.
He lives in Spain.
He lives in A Coruña still. Yes. He is desperate to have some sort of coaching role at the club, but the phone just doesn't ring.
I mean, I was looking on his Wikipedia page, and he apparently has had some rather lowly coaching jobs in regional Galician teams. I mean, he's really sort of linked to sort of grassroots Galician football.
There's clearly a sign that somewhere along the line he loves football and he just wants to be involved,
And he's a sort of an honorary Gallego as well. Yeah, obviously, absolutely. He's got Spanish nationality, played for the Spanish national team,
yeah. He'd waited a long time for the call-up. I mean, I think he gets called up at 29 or 30 by Javier Clemente.
Yes.
Gets his Spanish nationality. I seem to remember, but I haven't been able to find the video, him doing an advert, which was a little bit like that John Barnes Lucasaid advert, where John Barnes comes into the game and opens up his lockers and says, "Lucasaid gets you fast. Anyway, but Donato's one is he opens
from
up
the early locker. 1990s people, you wouldn't be surprised to hear.
Because Lucasaid is isotonic, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a Donato version of it. Well, I say version of it, that would be unfair, where he opens up his locker. And I remember this so vaguely that I'm convinced I must be wrong, but if someone's ever seen it and has a link to it, please find it.
It'll be on YouTube.
I was looking and I couldn't find it. Anyway, and he goes to his locker and takes out the Bible instead.
Oh, wow, okay.
Incredibly devout.
I wasn't expecting an
athlete of Christ.
Oh, wow,
That group of kind of Brazilian evangelist footballers.
All right, okay. Yeah. I heard him on the radio the other day. He's got a funny voice.
He's got a very funny voice, which was one of the things that was so striking about that advert.
All right, listen, we'll leave it there. Thank you for accompanying us on this journey through a history of most influential and biggest impact transfers in La Liga over the last few decades.
What have we learned this time? Because in the first episode, we learned as a player, never say never. Mm-hmm. In the second episode, we learned as a club, make sure your release clause on a player is substantial. Have we learned any lessons this time?
Have we learned any lessons? Yeah. Maybe the lesson is you might not expect it, but some people can change your life.
Wow,
that's,
okay.
That's profound.
That profound, is... isn't it? I mean, you know, John Aldridge, they knew it was changing because of the policy. But that policy that was done with a sense of regret, and actually very soon it was embraced. You go to Kubala, he brings you a stadium. This, you know, all right, people did know that Kubala was a big name. People did know he was exciting. The plan of the stadium was already there. But, you know, people can change your lives.
Just like you've done mine. Let's leave it there on that wonderful note. Oh, heavens, yes. Let's leave it there. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back in another couple of weeks with another edition of TSFP Presents A History of Transfers.